As you know, the SOFI is a joint report from FAO, IFAD, and WFP. And I'm very glad to tell you that the for another year, consecutive year, we have good news. The numbers of hunger are coming down this year, 2015, also. To summarize some of the main findings of the SOFI this year, I would like to highlight first the fact that among the 129 countries monitored by the FAO, 72, so more than half, have already reached the MDG 1, Millennium Development Goal, to half the proportion of unnourished people in their population. I think this is very important because this year, 2015, is the end of the Millennium Development Goals. Second, I would like to highlight that the developing world, has come very close globally to achieve the first MDG. If you look to the figures, the proportion of unnourished fell from 23% in 1990 to 13%, 12.9% to be more precisely, this year, 2015. So we are missing 1.5% to achieve the millennium goal. We're very close to that, but unfortunately, we didn't achieve as a whole. But we are very, very close to that. I think that it's important to say that the total number of unnourished people fell by 216 million people since 1990. This is a main achievement, despite that we still have near 800 million people unnourished in the world. I would like to highlight also that we can see that half of the world's unnourished people live in middle-income countries, that we could expect better progress on those countries. And this is my opinion, due to the fact that we need a more inclusive development strategy. Growth per se does not solve the problem of poverty or hunger. We need to have specific policies to address those situations. I would like to highlight also that the SOFI shows that 20% of the unnourished people lived in countries that we can say that are in protected crisis. Protected crisis for the time they are facing and also for the complicated the issue are, mainly of them internal conflicts that we have been seeing instead of reducing growing up. So these are two very important things that come out from the SOFI. But I think that the main message and the most important is that if 72 countries have already achieved the first millennium goal to half the proportion, we can be holistic and think that we can eradicate hunger. And we are very glad to see that in the Sustainable Development Goals that will be approved in New York next September, there is a goal to eradicate hunger and not anymore to reduce hunger. I think that we are now in position to say that this is possible. and the 72 countries that already achieved the first millennium goal shows the way forward. What are the main elements that we can take from this experience of those countries? I think that the first one, no doubt, is the political commitment. All those countries that have achieved great progress in alleviating poverty and hunger, there is a strong will to do it. Not only from the government, from the society. This is a society that eradicates hunger. It's a society that takes hunger to the high priority, not only the governments. Second lesson is what I already said, that economic growth is fundamental, vital, but not enough. Especially for developing countries, growth means more employment. And most of the unnourished people that we see is not due to the lack of production anymore, fortunately. It's due to the lack of access. So growth generates employment, and this is, as I said, vital, but not enough. We need good jobs, decent jobs, and we need active policies to face hunger. I would finish saying that what we see in those countries, the best experience shows how important it is to bring all these elements together at the same time. Let's say the political commitment, the economic growth, and the third one that we'll nominate now, focus in rural areas, because more and more hunger and semi-poverty are concentrated in rural areas. So we need to promote rural development in an inclusive way. I think these will are the lessons learned, the good lessons. Just to finish, highlighted that we have seen, unfortunately, that more and more the international aid coming from developed countries are concentrated on facing emergency. We have the figure now that 8% of development aid spent by major donors is allocated to emergency issues. Of course, we cannot avoid that, but also this is due to the fact that we are seeing the development aid being reduced. So it's very important for special poor countries, less developed countries, to count on the international community to help them overcome not only the emergency issues, but persistent issues like hunger and extremely poverty.
At IFA, we are also encouraged by the decreasing number of hungry people in the world overall. And we are very happy that the number is declining. 260 million people in one decade out of hunger is an important achievement. And as Graciano said, if the world could achieve it in 10 years, I think that the next 10 years are fundamental to fully eradicate hunger in the world. And it's clear that we can make it. We also welcome and support the governments that have made the decision and have engaged both financially and politically to make sure that these achievements are made to the society at large, but also to the international community that has been working in tandem with governments to make this enormous achievement. But yet we have about 1 billion people who are still starving, who are still suffering hunger, and that is the challenge of the next years. The data that is coming out of this report is going to be absolutely fundamental for a discussion that we will have just ahead of us in the next months in Addis, in relation to the financing for development. Getting people out of hunger and investing in sustainable development also involves dedicating financial resources. But I think that we have to always keep in mind that when we talk about numbers, we are talking about people. That when we talk about the number of poor people and hungry people, we need to remember that 3/4 of them are in the rural sectors of the world, be they middle-income countries or countries in protracted crisis. But also that many of them, and most of them, depend on agriculture for their livelihoods. At IFAD, we believe that sustainable development and food security needs to include smallholder farmers, needs to include the rural people in order to achieve the sustainable development goals that the world is going to commit to in September. If our goal is to invest in rural people so that they can sustain their livelihoods, employment can be created, productivity and income can be generated, and to strengthen their resilience and increase food and nutrition for themselves and for their communities. This report makes important points regarding productivity growth in small family farms and how they contribute to more inclusive outcomes and the reduction of undernourishment, not only by reducing the prices of staple food, but also by improving access to food. Inclusion is central to the post-2015 agenda, so are the rural people that need to be supported if sustainable development is to be achieved. We know that rural women and men can contribute to sustainable food systems if they have well-functioning infrastructure, supportive policies and institutions, and access to markets, to finance, to services, and to knowledge. They can play, and indeed they do play, a significant role in achieving food security at the local level, at the national level, at the regional level. We must invest in rural people and work with them, not only for them, so they can increase crop production in a way that also takes care of the environment. We must also work with them to improve their business, to make their business easier, and to strengthen their links to markets so that these family farms can feed themselves, educate their children, and invest in the growth of their own communities and of their own countries. So as we talk about these numbers and look at how we might finance a future without hunger and poverty, our message is clear. IFAD invest in people, and we need to invest first in the rural people. They are a vast and underutilized reserve. They are part of the solution. Our future begins with supporting the rural sector. Thank you very much.
I echo the words of the Director General in acknowledging a further real progress that has been made. Indeed, as many as 72 developing countries have or will reach the Millennium Development Goals. Together, we recognize and applaud the improvement. But we cannot yet celebrate. Since the establishment of the Millennium Development Goals, extreme poverty has been reduced by more than half. However, hunger has only been reduced by 14.5%. This provides clear evidence for the fact that growth and rising incomes do not correlate proportionately with improved food security and nutrition. Economic growth is not always inclusive. Rural livelihoods are not always invested in. Often, basic services may not reach the poorest and most vulnerable. Often, women are not included or empowered. Therefore, and as noted in this year's report, to ensure that social benefits derive from economic growth over the longer term, governments need to allocate additional resources to investments in social protection and safety nets, investments that aim to improve the food and nutrition security status of the poorest. I'd like to highlight that although the decreasing trend of hunger has also continued this year, wide differences among regions persist, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa, where the number of chronically undernourished people has actually been on the rise. In sub-Saharan Africa, nearly 1 in 4 are estimated to remain undernourished. Crisis environments like extreme weather events, natural disasters, political instability, and civil strife have all impeded progress in sub-Saharan Africa, but also in other countries. Globally, 1 in 5 of the world's undernourished lives in a crisis environment. Protracted crises have in many countries prevented the protection of vulnerable population groups and the promotion of income opportunities for all. Strong political commitment, respect for basic human rights, better integration of humanitarian and development assistance, women's empowerment are all necessary to address protracted crises. In this context, FAO, IFAD, and WFP have recently agreed a common conceptual framework on resilience for food security and nutrition, and we're focused on strengthening our joint efforts. In a similar vein, I'd like to applaud the efforts of the Committee on World Food Security, where they negotiated the upcoming framework for action on food insecurity and protracted crises. Future development agenda will be focused on eradicating extreme poverty and on hunger, on saving our planet, and on leaving no one behind. In that regard, I'm very pleased to see that member states have focused on a standalone goal for ending hunger. The post-2015 development agenda will have big implications for all of us. Perhaps most importantly, the post-2015 development agenda will be universal. This will ensure a focus on poor people, regardless whether these people reside in low, middle, or high-income countries, as the Director General has noted. Indeed, the concept of universality is crucial for ending hunger because the majority of the world's undernourished now reside in middle-income countries. The more we look at the facts, the more we understand that we must be resolute in protecting what has been achieved against the threats of conflict and natural disorder, and also determined to advance the unfinished business that's still before us. We see that in Nepal, 3.5 million people are in need of food assistance as a result of the devastating earthquake. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to conclude by highlighting the good news from this report. Once again, sustainable, accelerated, substantial reductions in hunger have been made, and the achievement of a world without hunger is possible in our lifetimes. The Rome-based agencies are strongly committed to doing our part. Thank you.
Penso che sia molto importante anche alla presentazione di questo importante lavoro, Sophie, richiamare innanzitutto la chiave educativa che Expo Milano 2015 sta cercando di offrire all'Italia e al mondo, in particolare con il massimo coinvolgimento delle giovani generazioni. E chi ha avuto modo di frequentare già Expo ha potuto, credo, capire l'importanza del rapporto che stiamo cercando di consolidare proprio con le giovani generazioni, con la scommessa che anche Graziano da Silva prima richiamava, e cioè essere tutti noi la generazione della fame zero, contribuire ciascuno per la propria parte a raggiungere questo importantissimo obiettivo. Io vi sono molto grato, perché penso che collegare questo rapporto, i numeri importantissimi che questo rapporto ci offre, alla piattaforma espositiva, al lavoro che qui noi sviluppiamo fino ad ottobre, sia molto importante. Lo facciamo con lo spirito di chi vuole contribuire al lavoro che FAO, IFAD, World Food Program fanno ogni giorno proprio su questo fronte. Avremo nelle prossime giornate degli appuntamenti molto importanti. In particolare io vi aspetto al forum internazionale per l'agricoltura che abbiamo organizzato anche con voi il 4 e il 5 di giugno, proprio qui in Expo. Avremo l'occasione di confrontarci con oltre 350 delegati provenienti da 100 paesi, quindi numeri importanti. Credo che la nostra chiave di approfondimento sarà molto legata davvero a come è possibile ora sostenere anche con azioni nuove i piccoli agricoltori essenziali per arrivare alla fame zero e al raggiungimento di questo grande obiettivo. Come implementare le azioni di sviluppo rurale, come supportare il rapporto tra innovazione e produzioni rurali, in particolare legate proprio ai piccoli produttori agricoli che sappiamo rappresentano quasi il 50% della produzione agricola globale, quindi piccoli probabilmente nella dimensione, ma enormemente importanti per il raggiungimento dell'obiettivo fondamentale che tutti ci stiamo dando. Concentreremo la nostra attenzione su questo e credo che varrà la pena anche di riflettere sul nuovo rapporto che dobbiamo costruire tra ecologia e agricoltura. Anche il rapporto SOFI ci indica questo grande tema come un tema decisivo anche per i prossimi anni. Io credo che anche in vista dei prossimi appuntamenti internazionali fondamentali, l'Assemblea Generale della FAO a Roma tra poco e poi altri appuntamenti cruciali, penso a Parigi, COP21, penso sicuramente ad Addis Abeba, ecco, noi possiamo veramente aiutare a sviluppare qualche linea di azione nuova per raggiungere questo comune obiettivo, con una ultima ambizione, che è quella di fare in modo che le esposizioni universali da Milano in poi, in particolare traguardando Dubai 2020, insieme lavorino per strumenti che durino anche oltre i 6 mesi espositivi. Io credo che una grande scommessa di Expo Milano è proprio quella di lasciare in eredità alcuni strumenti che poi da Expo a Expo possano essere utilizzati per completare quel grande lavoro di squadra che in particolare le organizzazioni internazionali del Polo di Roma da sempre supportano e coordinano. Questa è la nostra ambizione e con questa attenzione, con questo impegno vi aspettiamo nei prossimi giorni a Milano per Expo. Ringrazio veramente di cuore Graziano da Silva, il direttore generale della FAO, e certamente anche i nostri amici di IFA, del World Food Program, per la grande collaborazione di questi mesi e soprattutto per l'impegno e il lavoro che dovremo fare insieme nei prossimi mesi. Grazie.
2015 is a very special year. It is a special year for a number of reasons, which have been emphasized by Minister Martina, but it's also especially important because it represents the last year of the World Foods for achievement of the World Food Summit goal. The World Food Summit, for those who may not recall, was held here in Rome at the FAO in the year 1996. And also, Millennium Development Goal Target 1C specifically commits to reducing the share of hungry people in the world by half between 1990 and the year 2015. So 2015 is a special year, and part of the reason for the early publication of SOFI this year is precisely in order to be able to report as part of the Millennium Development Goals report the middle of this year, what has been achieved in terms of reducing hunger. SOFI 2015 raises, of course, addresses the question of how many people are hungry. And our latest estimates suggest that there are almost 795 million people who are undernourished in the world in this recent period. Of this, about 15 million are to be found in developed countries, which leaves 780 million, the vast majority, in the developing countries. The decline has been from 1990-1992 is by over 200 million, and the decline in the last decade has been commendable, a decline of 167 million. Where are the hungry to be found? The largest proportion are to be found in the South Asian sub-region, where there has been, unfortunately, some progress, but not enough progress to achieve the MDG target 1C. In sub-Saharan Africa, there's actually been an increase in the number of people who are deemed to be chronically undernourished, but there has also been some progress in terms of reducing the proportion of people who are deemed to be hungry. In East Asia, there has been a significant reduction, and East Asia is one of the sub-regions in which there has been consistent progress, together with Southeast Asia, as well as Latin America and the Caribbean. Have we reached the international hunger targets? In the developing regions, the prevalence of undernourishment, or what is often popularly referred to as the hunger rate, has dropped from 23.3% to just under 13%. 72 countries are deemed to have reached the MDG hunger target. And for this purpose, there will be an award ceremony on 7th of June 2015 to recognize those who have made these achievements. How did the various regions fare? I've given you a preview earlier, but you can see from this bar chart that there has been very uneven progress among the different regions. In 5 sub-regions, we have seen achievement of the MDG Target 1C. These are, besides Latin America and the Caribbean, it also includes East Asia and Southeast Asia, as well as Central Asia. However, there has been poor progress in other parts of the world, and in 2 sub-regions, in West Asia and in Central Africa, unfortunately, there has been a regression. What have been the key factors of success in reducing hunger? And this, I think, is very important, precisely as the world commits itself to eliminating the scourge of hunger and poverty by the year 2030. As the Director General emphasized, economic growth is important but not sufficient. It needs to be inclusive in order to reach the poorest and the hungry. Increasing productivity is important. It improves incomes and consequently access to food. But as we know from looking more carefully at different countries, you need to be able to increase productivity and incomes significantly enough to make the difference. As far as social protection is concerned, as the Director General has emphasized, we deem this to be extremely important, and we are happy to report that 130 countries in the world now have school feeding programs, and a growing number of countries have cash transfer programs. Social protection is important not only because it reduces hunger and poverty directly, but also because it can foster economic opportunities in order to build resilience and self-reliance, and of course increase productivity and incomes in the medium and longer term. Access to rural markets is especially important insofar as it provides access to employment, to inputs, in order to be able to increase incomes and outputs and incomes. International trade openness we have found to be a double-edged sword. It can bring many benefits, especially for countries which have been previously less than open. But there are also risks, because we live in a world where some countries are able to subsidize their farmers and other countries cannot afford to subsidize the farmers, and so the consequences can be very mixed. We have also found that protracted crisis, often due to conflict, but sometimes also due to natural disasters, have severely impacted on food security. And many of our countries where there has been little progress or even regression have suffered from such protracted crisis, resulting from natural or human-made disasters. Of the 20 countries in protected crisis, only 1, Ethiopia, has been able to reach the MDG hunger target. These are all very important lessons, as we work collectively together in this very important year in order to step up our commitment in order to make hunger history. Thank you.
You talked about foreign aid and how too much of it is going to countries in crisis, or a large part. I'm wondering if you have any examples of a country where foreign aid has actually really built long-term food security. The countries that seem to have done the best, Brazil, as you would know, and China, had very little foreign aid and successfully beat hunger. So I'm wondering, where has foreign aid actually worked in reducing hunger? Thanks.
First, I said that too much, 80%, is going to emergency due to the fact that the total amount is reducing. So what I ask is for more aid. So make clear that message, please. I'm not against that we use all the efforts possible in Nepal in this moment, for example, that they need it. But we cannot compromise the long-term aid for developed countries, especially for the most poor countries. I can tell you several examples of where foreign aid partners make a big difference. I can start in my region, Latin America, with country like Nicaragua, for example. After the civil war, Nicaragua was rebuilt based on foreign aid. And there are many situations like that. In this moment, we have concentrated aid, especially in protected countries that have protected crisis due to conflicts. Good examples for Syria, Libya, Central Africa Republic, and so on. So I think this is very important. What I want to say is that we cannot only act to relief in the first moment. The aim of the foreign aid is to build resilience in the country. So we need to go for relief, but then to rebuild the country and look for implementing resilience. This is what we need to avoid hunger.
Thank you, Director General. If anybody in the podium wants to add anything, please feel free to intervene. I see Agencia EFE from Spain. María, tienes la palabra.
Gracias. Me gustaría dirigir la pregunta al director general. Me gustaría saber, porque el objetivo ha estado cerca, pero todavía no se ha logrado. Y querría saber si se ha debido a circunstancias inesperadas o a que hay ciertos problemas que de alguna forma son difíciles de superar. Y si esto a su vez podría condicionar la agencia post-2015. Gracias.
María, no es que sea inesperado, porque ya duran 7 años. El hecho es que la crisis ha afectado fuertemente los países desarrollados, pero también ahora los países en desarrollo. Y eso sí hemos notado en los últimos 2 años una disminución del ritmo de reducción de la pobreza extrema y de la desnutrición. Aún peor que eso, sobre todo en países de ingreso mediano, lo que hemos visto es que a medida que el número de hambrientos va bajando, va subiendo la obesidad, sobre todo la obesidad en niños. ¿Y por qué? Porque con la crisis la gente no puede seguir comprando frutas, legumbres, carnes y derivados, y se concentra en consumir los productos energéticos, harinas, azúcares, grasas, ¿no? Y eso produce un otro tipo de malnutrición, que es la obesidad, que es una epidemia hoy día, quizá tan grave cuanto ha sido el hambre al inicio del siglo.
Muchas gracias, director general. No sé si Josefina quiere añadir algo al respecto.
Yes, thank you. I think that I want to address the question about foreign aid, because as the Director General says, the challenge that we have around the world is to sustain the gains that have been made, at the same time to continue reducing and bringing out of hunger still 1 billion people. To sustain what we have, productivity has to be increased. And for that, the smallholder farmers, as I say, play an important role. In many countries of the world, reducing hunger and starvation includes creating the capacities among many smallholder farmer organizations to produce better, to generate more income, to participate more in the market. I think Nicaragua is a good case, but we have cases in Ghana in which foreign aid, together with country investment, are helping cocoa producers to put their products in the market, generating income, generating employment, and creating the resources necessary to buy food. So foreign aid, we hope, that can still be available for, together with country budgets, be able to sustain the achievements and help us move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Josefina. Ritorniamo adesso a Milano, dove andiamo al Media Center. Vedo internamente, non so se ci abbiamo il collegamento, vedo al ministro e credo che ci avevamo a una collega giornalista di Xinhua News Agency. Vado a Milano, gli do la parola, ministro.
Buongiorno. Una domanda per favore. Una domanda per il ministro Martina. A proposito di eredità di Expo di cui ha parlato, qual è il contributo della Carta di Milano? Quindi a che cosa può concretamente portare questa iniziativa e come può e deve ogni singolo paese contribuire alla sicurezza alimentare?
Grazie per la domanda. Noi abbiamo scelto di proporre Carta di Milano come grande atto di global citizenship, quindi un documento di impegni che si rivolge direttamente ai cittadini, alle imprese, alle associazioni, alle istituzioni, in particolare su alcune delle sfide fondamentali per la lotta alla fame. È un documento di impegni che chiama in causa il singolo cittadino visitatore. L'idea da cui partiamo è consentire a tutti i visitatori, ai milioni di visitatori di Expo, di essere consapevoli delle sfide che abbiamo quando discutiamo appunto del nutrire il pianeta. È un documento che consegneremo al segretario generale dell'ONU il 16 di ottobre, quando il segretario generale dell'ONU sarà in Expo proprio per la giornata internazionale all'alimentazione. Vogliamo contribuire così innanzitutto ad alzare il livello del dibattito, della consapevolezza, del confronto sulle grandi questioni della sfida alimentare globale. E poi vogliamo in questo modo spronare tutte le istituzioni ad ogni livello, in particolare i governi, a mettere in moto azioni, politiche, scelte che in ciascun ambito aiutino a concorrere a questo obiettivo. Se penso ad esempio al grande tema dello spreco alimentare in Europa, ci sono ancora spazi, strumenti, azioni da attuare. Uno dei grandi percorsi che noi vorremmo animare da qui a ottobre chiama in causa direttamente queste istituzioni.
Grazie. Non so se ci abbiamo un'altra domanda da Milano. Altrimenti
sì, grazie.
Non ci abbiamo?
Sì, Milano? Ho anche una domanda. Sì, grazie. Sono sempre De Giuri di Xinhua. Ho una domanda anche per il direttore da Silva, per cortesia. Il presidente Xi Jinping ha lanciato e più volte sottolineato il concetto di community of common destiny, quindi il destino comune dell'umanità nell'affrontare le grandi sfide globali. Quindi vorrei chiedere a lei come si lega questo concetto al problema della sicurezza alimentare. Grazie.
Grazie Milano. Josefina, did you get the question addressed to you?
If I may have the question posted again, sorry.
Yeah. Possiamo avere di nuovo la domanda perché non abbiamo sentito molto bene, grazie.
Direttore, certo. Sì, il presidente cinese Xi Jinping ha lanciato il concetto di Community of Common Destiny, quindi il destino comune dell'umanità nell'affrontare le grandi sfide globali. Vorrei chiedere un suo parere su come questo concetto si può legare al tema della sicurezza alimentare. Grazie.
Grazie, adesso l'abbiamo preso.
Yeah, thank you very much, and I'm sorry I didn't get the question at the beginning. Well, we believe in IFA that food security is a global responsibility. And that, as we said in the few words that we said at the beginning, it is a responsibility of the society to achieve food security. Forming a global community to engage in ensuring food security, as what is happening now in Expo Milan, we believe is the way to go around. Consuming food as much as producing food responsibly is the responsibility of the global citizens of this planet.
Thank you, colleagues from Milano. We are going to go now to some other parts of the world. We will be coming back to Rome. I ask some passage to some of our colleagues here. I understand we have in London, The Guardian, Mark Anderson. Are you there, Mark? I can see you. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, thanks very much for having this call. This question is for anyone, but especially for you, Mr. De Silva. What do you think needs to be done to improve economic equality around the world?
Director General?
Could you repeat, please, what needs to be done?
What needs to be done to improve economic equality around the world?
Well, we have said that the economic growth need to be inclusive. That means exactly more equality. I think that the fact that nowadays some of the faster grow economies does not include the poor among those that are benefit. This is the main cause of persistence of hunger and malnutrition. What we need is to put in place a more distributive effect of growth. And we have learned, for example, from Latin America, a very important tool that is social protection. Expanding social protection schemes helps a lot to tackle undernourished. Not only cash transfer, as is the, let's say, most traditional way of building social protection, but we have now seen the positive effects of school meal programs. Countries that had implemented school meal programs, they are facing better results on the knowledge of the children, the progress of the children, and also they have been able to attract the children to go more frequently to the schools. So this is are all good news. And when this kind of program, social protection, like cash transfer and school meal program, are locally based, community based, they are able to promote local development. One of the things that is lacking behind is promoting development of rural areas that are isolated or in remote areas. So these virtual cycles that you can promote by consumption-led development through food security, to social networks, is what is desirable.
Yes, if I make another contribution here, I mean, we believe in IFA because we see it every day in our projects, that we have to continue working with the policies that facilitate the business environment for the smallholder farmers. We see cooperatives of producers in really faraway places who are ready to export, but it takes them three times more than a larger cooperative in the urban area to get their legal recognition, to get their permission for export. So we really need to facilitate the creation of enterprises, both agriculture and non-agriculture, in the rural sector so that we can generate income, they can generate employment, they can also generate new opportunities and new technologies in the rural sector. We believe that together with business should come the necessary infrastructure, should come the resources that the farmers need to start their business, should come to education, water. So it's not, there is no silver bullet, but we need to encourage business in the rural sector as a way of distributing the benefits of the society. Thank you.
Thank you. At this point, I'm going back to Milano just to say goodbye, ringraziare al Ministro per la sua presenza. Sappiamo che c'ha altri impegni e noi continuiamo con la conferenza stampa qui. Grazie, Ministro. Grazie. Let me go back then to Rome, to the floor, to see if there are any questions here in Rome. I see a lady, the lady down there. Thank you. Please identify yourself.
Hi, I'm Tricia Thomas with Associated Press. I wanted to ask the speakers, how much do you think climate change and global warming have affected hunger in this report, and how much will we see it affecting hunger in the next few years?
Anybody from the podium, feel free to intervene on climate change, maybe Jomo or maybe Director General?
Yes, I'll just start then. I think that my colleagues can add much more precise information. But there is something in climate change, for me, the most important. Of course, this is a biased view of an economist. But Keynes used to say that there are things that we just don't know about. Climate change impact, we just don't know about. We are seeing more and more frequent stream events happen, repeating more frequently, and all of them are affecting in a negative way food security, let's say. But there are also other effects coming that are positive effects. I just come back from a visit to Kazakhstan. Kazakhstan is growing the area that they are able to cultivate wheat and producing more and better wheat. I have to say that I was surprised to see that 40% of the wheat we eat here in Italy as pasta comes now from Kazakhstan. And this is due to the fact that they have increased the temperature in the soil due to impact of climate change. So just something that we didn't know until now and cannot be predicted despite the many sophisticated models that we have.
Jomo?
Yes, thank you very much. Let me follow up on the earlier question on equality. I think it's important to recognize that about two-thirds of existing inequality in the world, existing economic inequality in the world, is international rather than intranational. That doesn't mean that intranational inequalities are not high. As far as intranational inequalities are concerned, the World Bank currently estimates that 78% of the poor people in the world are to be found in the countryside. This is precisely what the Rome-based agencies are working on, and this emphasizes why it's so important what is being done as far as increasing productivity and incomes in the countryside is concerned. On the question of climate and global warming, the immediate effects of climate in the medium term of climate change may be quite mixed. In temperate countries, it is possible, it is likely, that there will actually be an increase in agricultural output. But as far as the equatorial and tropical zones are concerned, it is expected that there will be a significant reduction in output. All this will adversely affect incomes, and of course, most of the poor people in the world, most of the developing countries in the world, are to be found in the equatorial and tropical zones. So this will have consequences for global inequality. That is why when we address climate change, we need to ensure that climate action involves climate justice. Thank you.
Thank you, Jomo. Alan?
Well, whenever you have change, better or worse, the people most affected are the poorest and most vulnerable. So even if the long-term benefits of climate change may be positive in some areas, and I'm sure they will be, that change for people living on the margins who day to day or year to year don't know how they will support themselves, that is traumatic. So we are already dealing with the implications of that change. I think the positive thing is that things can be done. It's even if it's a negative impact, you can adapt. But you have to focus on adapting. It's not going to happen automatically. And I think the responsibility for us and for governments is to ensure that adaptation measures are put in place. Also, I mean, I think it's very clear to us that our role is a facilitative role. When you look at the SDGs, foreign aid was a significant component. When you look at the SDGs, and you're looking at trillions of dollars required to achieve that, the role of the international community of foreign assistance of agencies is a different role. And it's to help be a facilitative role, to help ensure those flows go in the right places, that they achieve the right things, that the benefits also are made available to the poorest, the most vulnerable, that it's inclusive. I think that's the role of our agencies. Growth is going to happen, and it may happen in ways that is not equal. But governments can also ensure that the benefits are more equally spread, even if the investments are not. And I think it's our role also to help advise and guide them in that response.
Thank you, Stanley. Josefina?
Yes, thank you. Winifred believed that if 80% of the food that is consumed in developing countries is produced by smallholder farmers, the issue of climate change and smallholder farmers is absolutely fundamental in food security. We do believe that the challenge, really, and the risk is the lackings, as I call it, the lack of climate information, the lack of tools for smallholder farmers in enough quantity to really be able to quickly adapt to the challenges of the environment. We hear everywhere, those of us who are going to the field, how much the farmers are talking about changes in rain patterns, but also the difficulties they are having to adapt to new crops, to move into different areas, and to adapt the agricultural productive culture. So we do believe that climate change is absolutely essential, that we have to take it into account, and that it has to be embedded into the way in which we all support governments and smallholder farmers. I think that adaptation to climate change is also hand in hand with a good management of natural resources. And in continents like Asia and Latin America, the management of forests, in which indigenous people play an important role, is also an essential part. So this is to say that, yes, it's a risk, but I think it's a risk because of the lackings that we have in those who are the majority producing food. Thank you.
Thank you. We are already running a little bit out of time. I'm going to have one last question here in Rome. The lady here in the first row, if we can go there. And with this, we will be closing this press conference. Thank you. Identify yourself.
Buenos días, soy Gina Márquez para Radio France Internacional. Quería hacer una pregunta a Josefina Stubbs, ¿no? Porque hablaste de business, generación de empleo y oportunidades para combatir el hambre. ¿Tenemos datos económicos? ¿Cuánto cuesta el hambre en el mundo? ¿Cuánto cuesta combatirla también? Los investimentos que han hecho. Gracias.
A mí me dijeron que las preguntas difíciles se las dejara Jomo. pero creo que la proyección que se está haciendo para los objetivos de desarrollo, para los SDGs que vienen, están hablando de 3 trillones de dólares necesarios para erradicar la pobreza, incluyendo la pobreza rural. Lo que nosotros no sabemos, por lo menos en el FID estamos tratando de entender, es cuánto le cuesta a un pequeño productor comenzar a montar su empresa. Y comparar eso para poder hacer un benchmark de hasta cuánto nosotros queremos reducir el costo de hacer negocio para los pequeños productores de manera tal que ellos realmente puedan participar de manera más activa en el mercado. El Banco Mundial, sin embargo, produce lo que se llama el Doing Business Report, que creo que de todas formas es un buen referente para conocer en el sector agrícola el costo de hacer negocio, el costo de no tener acceso a posibilidades de mercado. Creo que es parte del trabajo que tenemos que hacer para poder definir benchmarks y poder avanzar en medir cuánto estamos avanzando. Gracias.
Maybe I could also respond to that, because in Latin America and in Africa, we have, together with the OAS in Latin America and together with the African Union in Africa, done specific studies on the cost of hunger country by country. And the range is between 5% of GDP and 15% of GDP. I believe in Ethiopia it was closer to 15% of GDP is the cost of malnutrition and hunger to the economy there. And we're happy to make those studies available to you there online as well.
Thank you. Tomo?
Last year at the second International Conference on Nutrition, we tried to estimate the cost of malnutrition. And our estimates that globally it's about 5% of net economic output. In a more recent estimate, specifically on the question of obesity, estimates that the cost of obesity and overweight is about 2 trillion annually. It is third only to conflict and smoking. Thank you.
Thank you. Before I close this press conference, I wanted to add on this question, and I think it's a very relevant question, and I promise we didn't prepare it, because the next press conference we are going to have here in headquarters will be on the launch of a new report that FAO is preparing on the cost of hunger. We are aiming at the launch around the 8th of July, and that will be prior to the Conference on Financing for Development that will take place in Addis Abeba in Ethiopia the 13th and 15th of July. As I said, FAO is preparing a detailed report on the cost of hunger in the world, and we will be launching it roughly around the 8th of July. And with this, I close. I thank you, everybody, both in Milano and everywhere in the world that have been following, and everybody here in Rome. Thank you very much for your attendance.